if you are a real estate professional and are investing passively in other people's deals, as long as you aggregate all of your real estate into kind of one, you're able to then even use the cost seg that you're getting on your K-1s from your syndication distributions and offset your active income as well.
Do you love your job, but want other investment options than your company's 401k and trying to pick stocks? If so, you've come to the right place. In this podcast, you will get actionable information for your passive real estate investment journey. Welcome back to another episode of Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. Here's your host, Justin Dixon.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast. I'm your host, Justin Dixon, and I have on the pod today, Yona Weiss. He is the cost seg king. If you see him on LinkedIn, we dig into his journey from being a teacher to having a shift about 8 years ago and working for a mortgage broker for free just to kind of get some exposure and to learn about how to kind of break into the real estate game. We walk through some of his early deals and fix and flip world, and then we dive deep into the cost segregation world and how it's beneficial for both active and passive investors. Let's get Yona on the pod. Yona, hey man, nice to have you on the pod. I'm glad to have you on.
Thanks so much, Justin. Great to be here.
Yeah, no, well, let's jump in. I guess let's kind of start with kind of your story and journey kind of in real estate and just kind of give us your overview.
Well, I was a teacher for about 15 years before I ever found out or knew anything about real estate. And always has been my passion in helping people and educating people. And to this day, I continue to do so in many facets. But I was at a point in my life where I really didn't have much savings at all, was in debt, to be honest, and had a growing family and needed to do something different. And several people in my network at the time had mentioned real estate. It came up as a viable option, get in an industry. So I just got my feet wet, started to learn everything I could, started to just actually ended up working for free, essentially just apprenticing or interning, if you will, for a good friend of mine who was a mortgage broker, a commercial mortgage broker, and just kind of sat with him in his office for about, I don't know, 8-9 months, literally just like learning, gleaning from him. He had been in the industry for years. He himself owned properties, was a property manager, had done fix and flips, you know, you name it. And it was just so gracious to allow me to just kind of hang out with him. And yeah. I learned how to do cold calling, didn't know how to research, learn every single acronym that there was in commercial real estate. So I felt I was ahead of the game. And we ended up doing some loans, doing some hard money deals together. And then I ended up doing some fix and flips. I got my residential broker's license. So really kind of went in a lot of different directions, just trying to figure it out. Yeah. And it was kind of open to opportunity and see where it led me. And that's really been my philosophy in life. Just see where things lead. Just be open to opportunity. And then I was introduced to this company, Madison Commercial Real Estate. I'm sure people have heard of Madison Title. And Madison Specs is the cost segregation company. And I knew almost nothing about cost seg. But to my surprise, I quickly learned that neither did anyone else that I spoke to in the real estate industry. And yeah. I was like, this is weird. Like, nobody's heard of this. There were a few people who were like sophisticated and had been in the industry for years and were doing cost segregation. But the vast majority of people I found, I spoke to, not only did they not use it, but they never even heard of it. And to me, I found that as opportunity to educate. And really, that's what I've been focusing on, working with Madison Specs now for over 6 years and just focusing on educating people. So that's really my passion.
No, that's great. And I guess at what point did you kind of have that moment or that kind of shift in kind of priority of like, hey, I'm a teacher, I'm educating, and that's your passion and interest. And you're like, but I want to have more savings, more passive income. Like, I wanted to kind of figure it out. And at what point was that in life, I guess?
Yeah, about 8 years ago, I had been doing the teaching for a while and had a health issue came up in my immediate family that drove up some major bills, insurance didn't cover and things like that. And I was really kind of faced with a crossroads that I needed to do something else. And real estate just kept coming up in conversation when I asked friends of mine, acquaintances, like, what should I do? Like, I don't want to go back to school. I don't want to get just a random job. Like, what industry has like no ceiling, essentially, where the sky's the limit in terms of income potential and also does not require any formal education? Because I didn't want to go back to school at that point. And I was like, okay, real estate just kept coming up. And then as I got involved in the industry over a few years, you know, invested and then learned so much about investing, both actively and passively, that, you know, just the more people that I met, the more the network grew,
yeah,
the more fascinated I became with it. And so, and that's continues to grow every day.
And then, so you had this kind of shift and kind of a necessity to kind of figure it out, right? Because that tends to be what happens in some instances where you're going along, you're pretty happy and comfortable. And then it's like something happens, right? Whether you have a light bulb moment and your mental shift, or literally like you've got bills to pay and you're like, okay, I need to figure something different out. How did you kind of go from, okay, I'm going to figure it out to then apprenticing or doing an internship, if you will, with your friend who's a broker? And it sounds like he was, my shift was reading Rich Dad, Poor Dad. So it sounded like he was almost like the rich dad in that scenario where he was kind of imbibing all of his knowledge and information to you.
It's true. And that really happened because I think, and obviously everything I believe is from God, everything happens for a reason. And it was literally just a random meeting. Like I met him in the parking lot one day, like randomly, a good friend of mine for many years. And we just happened to bump into each other. Like, hey, what are you up to? Hey, what are you up to? I'm like, I need to do something. You know, I need some sort of opportunity. Have any ideas? And he's like, yeah, hey, you know what? I've been, he was a commercial mortgage broker for many years. He's like, I just left the firm that I was working for, going off on my own, doing my own stuff. Cool. You want to just come hang out with me? It was literally like right at that time, and it was perfect opportunity. So I was like, sure, I don't know the first thing. So I literally remember we like had a meeting, coffee that first, like a week later, and he just like starts telling me about mortgages and about leverage and LTVs and all of a sudden I'm like, okay, whatever. And then he got me a book, which is an incredible book, by the way. It's a free resource. In fact, anyone who's interested can go and check it out. It was written by Ira Zlotowicz, who's the founder of Eastern Union, one of the biggest commercial mortgage companies in the country. And it's called The Eastern Way. And if you just Google The Eastern Way, it's literally like a free PDF download. You can go to the website there. And what it did was literally just like a glossary breaking down of terms, like every single term in and talking and going through explaining how cap rates work, explaining what CAM is, you know, common area maintenance, you know, explaining what LTVs and how that makes a difference between interest rates and DSCR, all these different things. And I was like, just wow, it's amazing. And the fact that I was working with him and we were like calling owners and calling banks and actually doing it was so much more than just reading a book. I was reading it and then implementing those same things like every day. And that really, I think, fast-tracked my growth by years.
Yeah. Did you kind of quit the teaching side when you were doing this? So you kind of said, okay, stop the teaching. And I'm like, I'm going to kind of bet on myself kind of a thing and do this for free, knowing that or assuming that there was going to be a big payoff coming soon.
That's exactly right. And you know what? It was a big risk and it was something that I was very uncomfortable with at the time because I'd never done anything like that. That's exactly what I just really basically bet on myself and kind of put myself in God's hand and said, hey, this is what I'm doing. This is the direction I'm going in. Like, let's make this work. And it did take a couple of years until I really started seeing fruits of that labor that really paid off.
Yeah. So let's talk a little bit about kind of your first maybe breakthrough, if you will, because you said, obviously, you're reading this book and that's kind of a lot of people read and then they put the book down and then they forget about all the things. And then they read another book and this constant cycle of you just don't action on things that you're learning in books. You obviously were doing the opposite of that and reading books and then literally putting that into practice. So maybe let's talk a little about kind of your first deal or first project that you worked on that you actually either were kind of the lead on it or you had a lot of skin in the game, whether it was sweat equity or actual capital kind of going into that deal.
Sure. I mean, there was a lot going on. Again, I did that commercial mortgage brokering thing for about, I don't know, about a year or so, and then did some residential brokering. I remember one deal that was just amazing. It was just like helping a guy refinance about a portfolio of about 9 or 10 triple net, single tenant, triple net properties.
Yep.
And I just remember like these were all Rite Aids and Walgreens and those type of properties where they were sitting, the single standing, single tenant properties in the Midwest, like all of these random little towns, right?
Yeah.
In Ohio. And I remember like calling these local banks in Ohio and just, hey, can you send us a term sheet? Can you do all this stuff? And I put so much sweat. And then finally, when the loan actually closed, after months, literally back and forth and term sheets and different banks and all that kind of stuff. And we finally got one closed. That was like a light bulb moment for me. It was like, wow, okay, this actually works, right? I can originate loans, I can get deals, I can try to find as much, but when you actually close on something, it's just like, you see the check and you see—
You see the dollars go into your bank account. You're like, okay, this works. Let me just keep this flywheel going.
You realize that it can take months and months to go into it. And you have to realize that it's not a career that you're going to see results in a short period of time. It's just not.
Yeah, real estate is definitely not a get rich quick scheme, right? It's not like investing in a Bitcoin or a stock or something like that, where like it could pop overnight, it could go to zero overnight, but it's kind of the slow and steady wins the race kind of a scenario in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I want to kind of dig into the Madison spec stuff, but I want to do want to take a quick sponsor break. So we will be right back.
Whether you're in a job you love or hate, building a financial foundation is important. This foundation can support you by providing passive income, stability in an uncertain economy, or the launching pad for you to start your own business. Great Venture Capital helps busy professionals invest in commercial real estate to build passive income streams, grow wealth, and take advantage of tax benefits. If you'd like to learn more, check us out at greatventurecapital.com or send an email to justin@greatventurecapital.com.
All right, we are back on the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast with Yona. And before the break, we kind of talked about his initial journey about kind of getting into the real estate world based on a shift or a requirement to kind of make some changes. Now I want to kind of pivot a little bit into kind of your W-2, like your working job, right? This Madison specs, cost segregation. I'm in the multifamily syndication world. The cost seg is definitely something that is part of the pitch deck. It's definitely something that is talked about amongst active investors, and asset investors kind of are curious about it. Maybe they don't know about it. So let's start in the beginning. Kind of how did you get introduced to Madison? And then let's walk through at a high level first, and maybe we'll dig into a little bit about kind of what a cost seg is and how it works.
Sure. I'm happy to kind of get into that. The way that I was introduced to the company was also just, I was open to opportunities and something came along. It was like, hey, you should meet this company, Madison. They're actually hiring. I'm like, okay, what's this cost segregation thing about? Had a meeting, hit it off great with one of the guys there. I'd heard of Madison, amazing company, Madison Title, have a great name, great reputation people-wise, but didn't really know the first thing about cost segregation. And again, this goes back about 6 years ago. So this was even before the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act, before the 100% bonus depreciation was introduced. And I was enjoyed learning, again, because of my teaching background, I just enjoyed learning about this concept. And like I mentioned earlier, since I had been in the industry for a couple of years already, I started just putting feelers out there to every single person that I knew. No, on the one hand, to try to see if anyone want to give us some business. And on the other hand, just kind of to see what this whole thing was about. And I reached out, I remember, to one of my mentors at the time, a different guy who had been in real estate for 25 years, incredible developer that I formed a very close relationship with over the years. And he's like, oh yeah, I love cost segregation. I actually use Madison for all my cost segs. I'm like, wow, that's a small world. Like, and he told me, he's like, sure, go for it. It's a great company. See what happens. So they were looking for someone in business development. And that was, I didn't have any background in accounting or engineering. Right. And so I'm not a numbers person. I'm not doing that side of the business. But what I was able to do was see that there was a void. And now you talk about that every syndication, multifamily space, it's a no-brainer that every pitch deck has it in there about the costing numbers. Well, that didn't exist 5-6 years ago. Nobody, like even very few people even knew about this, and we're not using it. I'd say the large players, institutional and large private equity and people that have been in the business for a long time and corporations were definitely using it, but the syndication space was definitely not using it as extensively as it is today.
Got it.
Yeah. So, and that's kind of how I got involved and just started. Got on a webinar, did some webinars, did some podcasts, and then it just kind of snowballed from there to this point. I've been on 500 podcasts and I don't know how many dozens or hundreds of webinars that I've done. Again, just educated, but I found that once you know what it is, how it works, it's almost a no-brainer. Either it's totally good for your business plan or totally not. But the fact is that most people still to this day don't even know what it is.
Yeah.
And so therefore, they're just lacking. What I look at is just that education about it.
Yeah. Let's think about it from a syndication space, right? So if I'm looking at a 100-unit apartment complex built in the 80s, let's just say, what's the benefit or how does it work kind of going from top to bottom? And then maybe we'll kind of peel back the onion a little bit.
Yeah. Anytime you buy a property, you're going to get this deduction called depreciation. Okay. And just to kind of be high level for our listeners who may not be so familiar with cost segregation, depreciation is a tax deduction that essentially says you can write off the entire value of your property over a long period of time. What cost segregation does is breaks down that property into different components, and certain components depreciate faster And so from an engineering perspective, we can break down the building into its components, say certain personal property, furniture, fixtures, you know, carpeting, flooring, countertops, et cetera, all depreciates on a five-year schedule. We're able to take those deductions at a faster rate, giving you more cash flow as an investor during those early years of ownership. So 80s property is typical, especially multifamily space. You're dealing with, even though it's older, the amazing thing about depreciation is it's not intrinsic to the property, meaning even though you depreciate this property, what's called depreciation over 27 and a half year period, well, that starts over every time there's a transaction. So every time there's a new owner, they can now take that depreciation fresh from new and start their schedule 27 and a half years over.
Got it. And so if you're looking at it from an investor's perspective, how does the cost seg benefit like a passive investor, right? Obviously, you talk about tax deductions, but that doesn't necessarily impact their W-2 earnings, right? But how does that help them? And why is it in pitch decks? And you know, we talk about it.
Yeah, because real estate is one of the few industries that exist that you can actually pay very little taxes on the income that's produced from that property or from your investments. Now, what a lot of people don't understand is that there's limitations to how you can use these depreciation deductions. The great thing about using cost segregation, getting a larger amount of these depreciation deductions, essentially wipe out any income that's being produced from the investment during the life of ownership. And so think about that. When you're normally taxed, your money is taxed at the highest rate with other investments from the stocks, capital gains, your portfolio income, or your earnings from your W-2 or what have you. That's at your ordinary income tax rates. That's taxed at a very high amount. Whereas you can put some money in a passive investment and the money produced from that investment is essentially tax-free. And so that's a very compelling position for a lot of people who want to have their money work for them. However, there are limitations, meaning you cannot use those deductions to then go ahead and offset your W-2 income, excluding certain circumstances. There are some exceptions to that rule, but generally speaking, that's why it's so important, why so many syndicators want to include that, because here we're offering a tax kind of sheltered investment.
Yeah. And we should say that we're not accountants or lawyers or anything. So please consult. Everybody's situation is different. So yeah, please consult the professionals out there. But yeah, it's interesting. And maybe I guess you talked a bit about kind of the Jobs Act and some of the bonus depreciation and everything. And that's starting to phase out. Last year, I think it was the last year, you get 100% bonus depreciation. So maybe dig a little deeper and go a little maybe level two on like, what is bonus depreciation and how does it, what's the step down? I can't even remember what the schedule is to kind of get rid of that.
Sure. So back in 2017, they passed this law called 100% bonus depreciation, which essentially allowed you, once you've done a cost segregation study and allocated certain components to accelerated depreciation to either a five-year or 15-year schedule, you now have the option to take 100% of those deductions in the first year. Mm-hmm. So instead of spreading out, so you just take a simple example, like $1 million property, you may be getting about $200,000, $250,000 of that as a deduction, as a write-off over first 5 or 15 year period. So you're accelerating, you're getting double or triple your regular depreciation deduction. And what bonus depreciation says is you can now take that full lump sum of $200,000 in the first year. And so that was extremely compelling for a lot of investors, especially who have the exceptions, are allowed to use those deductions against other sources of income.
Yeah.
Now, that was set in stone back in 2017. And was meant to start phasing out. So you're absolutely correct. 2022 was the last year for 100% bonus depreciation. This year, 2023, it's down to 80% bonus, which means you can take 80% of those deductions, those accelerated deductions in the first year. The remaining 20% can still be spread out over 5 and 15 year respective period. However, it's going to continue to phase out by 20% each year. So next year, it's going to be 60, then 40 after that, et cetera. However, there is a bill actually right now at the time of this recording. So we don't know.
Late June, 2023. So,
right. Yeah. So there has a bill that's been passed already in the House, is still waiting to be accepted in the Senate to see if extend 100% bonus depreciation, at least for a few more years.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah. I actually hadn't heard that. That's one of the benefits about doing these podcasts is I get educated just as much as the listeners do, as far as that goes. So I guess I'm curious, kind of, so you kind of were there before cost seg was kind of the rule or kind of the norm, right?
Right.
And I guess I would imagine that it's like shooting fish in the barrel now that it is a norm as far as it goes. Probably that last couple of years have been pretty easy for you to kind of go out and find new business and be like, hey, we're Madison Specs. We do cost seg. Our doors are open kind of a thing.
Yeah, it has been. I've used social media a tremendous amount and also the use of podcasting. You know, like I said, I've been a guest on 500 podcasts or so up to this point. So kind of my name has become synonymous with cost segregation. So people kind of know what I do. And it's like you said, it's a no-brainer. And I remember years ago, I had a meeting back when we were doing like in-person meetings. I went to this guy's office in New Jersey, a developer, and I went to his office in New Jersey and I was explaining the whole thing. And he like didn't get it. He like couldn't wrap his head around it. And I like trying to show him the numbers and like put it on a spreadsheet. And he was just like, something was blocking him from getting like why this was so beneficial. And then like, I just broke it down into simple terms. Like, okay, you have this property, $50 million, right? And you have tax liability of like $4 million. Well, guess what? If you do this cost seg, you won't pay that $4 million taxes. And he was just like blown away. And he was like, Yona, you don't have to sell this. He's like, yeah, this is not a sale. He's like, you're in a business that does not require selling. If you can just explain it properly to people and they get it, they'll be chasing after you. And right. So that to me was like kind of like a paradigm shift at that point. It was like, okay, so I'm just going to keep focused on just educating.
You need to talk about it and get it out there. And people will just, if they build it, they will come, kind of a scenario.
Right.
Got it. So I guess the taxes don't go away, right? You still have to pay them at some point and all of that, right? So you're just kind of pushing or kicking the can down the road in certain circumstances.
To a certain extent. Now, there is something called depreciation recapture tax on the sale of any property, which means similar to a capital gain, you're going to be taxed on the amount of depreciation that's been taken. Now, that does not mean that you're paying it back. Okay, that's a big misconception. People think recapture means I'm paying all that depreciation back. It doesn't mean that. So it's not really true that you're paying it back. You are using the time value of money to reinvest that money and not pay taxes during the life of ownership. And then you may even have ways to either further defer or offset those taxes with another investment or other sources at the time of the sale. So it's never a given that you are going to pay back or even pay anywhere near to the amount of tax you would have paid had you not done the cost seg. So essentially, in most cases, I'd say 90% of the time, it's going to be a win scenario regardless.
Yeah,
there are certain occasions where it's not a good idea to do cost seg. We kind of alluded to this earlier.
Is a cost seg really beneficial for if people are listening and they have maybe single family houses or they have 2 to 4 unit apartment complexes and that's their world? Is it beneficial from your experience to do it or can you do it on smaller deals, single family houses, or assuming they're rentals, long-term rentals, not like a fix and flip, but is it beneficial to do those scenarios? Because obviously it costs money to do it, right? You're not doing it, providing a free service.
Correct. Absolutely. Yeah. This is not a charity.
That's right. You're not a nonprofit. So yeah, I guess if somebody's listening, like, hey, I've got a 4-unit complex, is it beneficial to kind of do it? And also, can you do it? Let's say they bought it 5 years ago. Can you do a cost seg now?
So first question first, yes, this can be totally beneficial, even for single families. As long as they're not your primary residence, rental property, you can certainly do it. We've actually done a ton of work in the short-term rental space for a very specific reason that I'll share in a moment about the tax benefits specifically surrounding short-term rentals. However, yeah, it can be done. I'd say, generally speaking, any property purchased for over $200,000 or $300,000 is definitely worthwhile looking into. Especially if you are a real estate professional. That's something we didn't touch on yet, but that essentially gives you like a golden ticket to use the tax deductions against your active income as well, not just limited to your passive rental income. And you mentioned, yeah, we're not a free service. However, we always do provide a free upfront estimate or analysis so people can know if it is going to make sense, whether it's single family, small multifamily, and it's not limited to multifamily either. I know this podcast is more focused on multifamily, but this is something that can be done on any type of commercial investment, you know, whether it's office or storage or mobile home parks, you name it. As long as it's a property, it's a rental or business property, you can do a cost seg on it.
Got it. So you mentioned kind of the real estate professional, and I've had a few other folks on that have kind of touched on that. But how does a cost seg benefit, or to your point, the golden ticket? How does that work if you are a real estate professional? Maybe just give a quick 2 seconds on what that is, and then, you know, dig into the golden ticket idea.
Absolutely. The IRS says that someone who works full-time in the real estate trader business, either you or your spouse, so only one person in a couple needs to actually do this, then you're allowed to use the deductions from depreciation to offset your active income. Otherwise, as we mentioned earlier, the depreciation deductions are limited to just offset any passive income or passive gains from the sale of real estate. So that's why this is so important, because if you're a broker or you own real estate and it's your full-time job, even if you're doing other things like you're doing fix and flips, but you have a rental property or two, you can use the cost seg to offset that active income that would otherwise be taxed at the highest possible rate. And so also, if you are a real estate professional and are investing passively in other people's deals, as long as you aggregate all of your real estate into kind of one, you're able to then even use the cost seg that you're getting on your K-1s from your syndication distributions and offset your active income as well.
Interesting.
Yeah, so that's why I call it the golden ticket.
It's obviously it is a golden ticket if you are a real estate professional, or you can't really prove that you're a real estate professional if a W-2 employee and not in the real estate game. Because I think there's a stipulation, you've got to work more hours in real estate than another if you're a consultant or something like that.
Correct. Absolutely.
So you mentioned something, you teased a little bit about kind of the STR world. I've been dabbling in that kind of in my spare time because I still see a lot of opportunity in short-term rentals, mainly from a cash flow perspective. I look at some of the syndications that I do more for the appreciation from a long-term perspective. But what does a cost seg do for if you buy a luxury Airbnb in Maui or something like that, and it's $1 million, $2 million? How does that, is it same kind of model with short-term rentals, or what's the story there?
It's the same model. And I would even like kind of backtrack it a little bit. It doesn't have to be this luxury, thing. You could be, like I said, a $200,000, house that you're Airbnb-ing. The main reason why it's more beneficial for short-term rentals is because there's a specific rule with regards to the same thing we're just talking about, the passive losses and the passive activity rules. There's a rule that says that if you own a short-term rental and the average stay is less than 7 days, it is an entirely different category of investment. And there are rules that say that if you materially participate, meaning having a minimum of 100 hours a year. So this is very different than the real estate professional status where you need to work full-time. You have a minimum of 750 hours a year, but you cannot have another job.
Yeah.
Okay. With a short-term rental, as long as you are the one that is spending more time on this than anyone else, and you're spending a minimum of 100 hours a year, which is pretty much anyone, especially in the first year of setting up a property, then you can use those passive losses to offset your W-2 income. And so again, this is an exception to the rule. And that's why I say even on a smaller property, I have literally hundreds of clients that are using this, what we call the short-term rental loophole. It's not really a loophole, but it allows you to work a full-time job, have a, one or even a couple short-term rentals that you're self-managing.
Yeah.
And that's really the key. The self-managing is the key.
You can't have somebody else do it. You have to be, to your point, it's 100 hours plus you have to be the person that's working on it the most. Right.
Correct.
So you can't have a property manager and you're just kind of checking in on it and saying you're working on it. You have to actually be the one doing the work.
Correct. And so I've seen people literally been able to offset their income or have one spouse retire because they're able to get the tax benefits are so much better than having to work full time and not get those tax deductions.
Yeah. I had a guest on a while ago, and that's what kind of piqued my interest about the short-term rentals is he mentioned something about this, and I didn't really dig into it from a cost seg perspective. But he mentioned the requirements and the ability to offset active income and all that fun stuff, which is why I'm if I can get one or two of these guys and manage it myself, that would be interesting. So I guess, where do you see kind of, industry going? Are there anything else coming out? Cost seg is one thing. Is there anything else that Madison Spec or Madison Title is kind of looking at that could benefit the industry, or is cost seg kind of, and I guess what happens to cost seg once, assuming this bonus appreciation phases out? Is it going to be as popular or as kind of required, if you will, for a syndication or triple net lease place?
Yeah, I'd say it would be a little less popular. A lot of people are doing it for the bonus depreciation, 100% bonus depreciation. As that phases out, we'll see if it gets less popular or not. My feeling is it's not going to be, because I actually didn't answer another question that you had there earlier about, and this is really kind of, I'll answer them both at the same time, is can you do this? You asked earlier, can you do this on a property that you own for a number of years?
Oh, right.
And really the point to that is, yes, you can. And that does not even require you to amend your previous year's tax returns. And I think that's a great strategy, a great tool. Right now, people may have had properties, they were doing fine. They really didn't need the tax deductions. But now, especially right now in the middle of 2023, where the market is down, people, I'd say acquisitions are down, I'd say by 50%. Our title business is down, I'd say by 50% from last year, which means people are just not transacting. People are definitely looking at deals and trying to make things work. But I think sellers are still thinking that it's
there's still a delta
year
between what sellers think the value is and what a buyer does. There's always a little bit of a delta, but right now it's like they still want 2021 pricing, and it's interest rates were 2 and 3 back then, not 7.
Yeah. So. And so I think now more than ever, people are going to be looking for other ways to save money, other ways to kind of increase NOI. And the tax savings is another component of that. Maybe it didn't make sense to do it earlier, or maybe they had thought to hold the property for a shorter period of time. Now they're going to hold it for a longer period of time. And so conservation will be there as a great strategy, a great tool to use in that situation. And another thing that's really important to think about is you're talking about passive investors or looking for deals. Well, guess what? If there aren't syndications, there are not acquisitions happening, right? There's much, much, much less happening right now, which means you can't really find a deal to invest in. I mean, it's much, much harder to find a deal. So maybe people are going to be looking at investing. I've heard this from a lot of passive investors, including myself. I mean, I'm an LP in almost a dozen different deals, different asset classes. And there's not really a lot of deals right now coming across my plate that make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
I'm looking to buy a single family. I'm looking to buy a short-term rental myself because I think there's an opportunity. I think a lot of other investors will find the same, which means there will be opportunities outside of just, you know, the passive investments.
Yeah. Can you do a cost seg? Let's say you bought a property, let's say that 1980s property I was just talking about, you know, you buy a property and you do a cost seg initially, but then you do typically the deals that we work on are value add, right? So there's some type of a renovation strategy. So are you able to do additional or an amendment or a second cost seg 2 years down the road when you've renovated 70% of the property or whatever the case is?
Yes, certainly. So anytime you buy a property, right, it's going to be depreciation is based solely on the purchase price. You do the cost seg on that. But when you do a value add or when you do renovations, you're going to be updating things, which means certain components are going to be disposed of, which means you can actually write those off of your balance sheet, of your depreciation schedule. And then any money that's put back into the property can and should be depreciated, which means if you're doing a major renovation, you can actually do an updated conservation study. So you're not going to amend anything. You're going to do an additional kind of updated depreciation schedule based on the renovations that have happened subsequently.
Do you have to base it off the purchase price or do you do some type of an appraisal to kind of get kind of the new market value based on the renovations?
No, it's based solely on the money that was spent. And so let's say you put in $250,000 into your property. We're going to break that down and see, okay, what actual costs went into the flooring, went into the windows, went into a backsplash, you know, and this and that. And so we're going to be able to, engineers will break those down into the categories.
Got it. I guess we are recording this in kind of mid-2023. I definitely agree. I've seen a lot more deal flow lately. I use deal flow with air quotes because everybody calls them deals and they sit on the market for a long, long time. But I guess, where do you see the rest of 2023 going? Because obviously you're an investor yourself. You're looking at other options. I think that's kind of what a lot of people are doing, like you said. Yeah. Crystal ball. What do you think the rest of 23 looks like from maybe a multifamily commercial side, kind of that standpoint?
Well, there are still deals out there. You say air quote deals. They haven't been allowed that have penciled, but I've looked into, and over the years I have invested in other asset classes as well. And I'm focusing on, you know, more mobile home parks and RV parks, different types of affordable housing that have greater returns than traditionally multifamily had. A little different, a little more out there. You have to obviously find operators that are trusted. That's been a challenge right now. And it will continue to be a challenge because right now we're going to see people lose deals, lose properties. Yeah. I think we've already seen it happen a little bit, you know, not a tremendous amount, but as just the data points to the fact that there are a large amount of loans, bridge loans that are coming due in the next 6 to 12 months, people are going to be left holding the bag and the banks are going to take back, which means it's a cycle. We're going to see new operators or syndicators that just couldn't handle it, that did things that were maybe not so wise in the long run. And people are going to lose money, unfortunately. We're going to see it happen. And that will kind of hopefully weed out some people from the rest of us. And we'll see new people come to light, new players come on the scene. And so the people with the track records that have been able to get through this and survive, and not just survive, but potentially thrive, I think that's where I'm looking to see and following that closely.
Yeah. Yeah, you said something earlier about the good thing about real estate is you don't have to have credentials or education to get into it. That's also a bad thing because everybody can get into it. And I lost out on many deals over the last 3 years where I was made it to best and final and maybe finished second or third, where I know that depending on what they paid, the person is going to be hurting this moment. In my mind, overpaid. And if they're not capitalized well enough to weather the storm, to your point, you have to hit a certain ratio to, or debt service ratio to actually refinance into long-term debt. So if you can't do that, you can't refi. So you're either going to have to go back to your bridge lender and say, can you extend me or something, or it's not going to be a good result. So, and I guess as you think about kind of your kind of journey, you've obviously invested in a number of asset classes over the last few years. What have you seen, barring kind of what we're going through right now, what have you seen? It's kind of like either something you want to invest more in if you had more deals, or you mentioned a little bit about kind of your looking at some short-term rentals and maybe buying your own single family, like maybe talk through kind of what you're going to be doing maybe over the next handful of months.
Exactly that. Always looking for deals. Always have my eyes open. I have a few operators that I'm very close with and have been very successful in the mobile home manufactured housing community type properties, as well as RV parks. So I'm going to double down a little more on that if deals come about in the next couple of quarters, and very actively looking, like I said earlier, at a short-term rental. I've been looking in the Smoky Mountains are a great place, kind of destination, vacation destination. So I'm looking in something like that, although that's been saturated for a couple of years. I'm very close with some of the brokers out there, the top shops, the short-term shop out there. And the Blue Ridge Mountains of Georgia are actually very beautiful and wouldn't mind having a place out there either.
Got it. And I guess as I think about kind of the listener, a lot of these people are hardworking WT people, and you kind of gave a good resource. So I'll kind of just piggyback on that a little bit. But if somebody's listening and they want to like start their journey, and right now it's kind of an interesting time to kind of like start your investing journey, just given the kind of chaos that's going on in the markets and everything like that, and also the lack of deals and all of that. I guess, where do you think is a good place to start? Obviously, they're listening to this, so they have the bug, and they're at least they're aware of real estate. Like, what's a good starting point? Obviously, that book or that PDF is probably a great resource to start with. But what other advice would you kind of give to a person to start?
PDF is a good resource for, I think, someone getting into lending and commercial real estate and that kind of thing. But if someone's looking to other aspects, Bigger Pockets has a lot of incredible books. I'm a huge fan of the podcast from years and years ago. Not such a big fan of the podcast today. It had a ton of resources, but the books they've had, Brian Burke, for example, has an incredible book called Hands Off Investor. And excellent for passive investors, but even for active investors, because you really understand the mind of a passive investor as well. And Avery Carl, who I mentioned, the short-term shop out in Tennessee, she wrote a book for Bigger Pockets called Short-Term Rentals, Long-Term Wealth. And that's really just like a handbook to running your own and self-managing Airbnb short-term rental. So, and I would say, again, Bigger Pockets bookstore they have there, just tons. Jay Scott has another incredible book they just published this year on underwriting and finances. So much available out there, but that's probably a good place to start. If you're into books, if you're not into books, maybe some more podcasts like this.
Yeah. I mean, that's how I started on the Bigger Pockets podcast with back when Brandon was still the host and all and the co-host and all that fun stuff. I haven't listened to it actually a lot recently. So I want to kind of round us out here as we've been kind of going through a lot, and hopefully our listeners have taken away some good tidbits from this, especially from the cost seg world. But I've got a kind of a three pack of questions I ask every guest. You've kind of answered one already, but we'll still ask it. But first one is, what's one piece of advice that got you started or helped you along your real estate journey?
So many things. I think having a mentor is probably the biggest thing that you can have, whether it's part of a mastermind group as a group or just having someone that you can lean on. And I've been blessed to have several of those people in my life who I've been able to just lean on. They've gone through a lot, they've experienced a lot, and I can learn from them. So that's the best thing I would say.
Got it. So this one you probably answered, and maybe we can just kind of rattle off a few, but what's your favorite real estate or business book that you're into right now?
Right now, I would say there's a book called Who Not How. It's an excellent book. It's, I mean, really a game changer for anyone looking to scale their business, whether it's investing or real estate or just their own life. It's just figuring out how to delegate. Just an incredible, incredible resource.
I'll have to look at that. I'm actually in the process of scaling right now. So that's interesting.
Yeah, probably one of the best books out there on the subject.
Awesome. I appreciate that. Last question is, if you hit your financial freedom number, meaning you could live an amazing life just off the passive income from real estate, what would you do?
I'm already doing it, to be honest. I love what I do. I really do. I spend most of my time on LinkedIn, to be honest. Mm-hmm. I give back a lot, just teaching other people how to scale. I love connecting people. I wouldn't do much differently. I'd probably spend a little more time with my kids. I have six kids, so they're all at different ages, but I'd probably spend a little more time than I am now.
Yeah, it's funny. The vast majority of the people that I've interviewed on the podcast have said something similar of like, I'm doing it. Like, even though maybe they are working a W-2, but it's in real estate or something, they just love what they do. So I don't think I've had anybody say, I would just leave and go sit on a beach for the extended life. But
you know, there are people like that. You'd be surprised. You know, I had someone, it was actually incredible, a woman that was a client of ours at some Cossacks and then literally just disappeared. You know, and I was on her podcast. You know, she was in that space. She had a podcast and then saw her at a conference once years ago and then like just disappeared. Wouldn't answer her phone calls. Emails were like being forwarded to someone else. And I reached out to one of her former partners and he's like, yeah, she just decided, you know, she's got a passive income, built a house for herself and just went off the grid, like just disappeared from the internet.
It sounds awesome for like, I think I would do that for the first like 3 months, maybe just kind of just like go sit somewhere and just kind of decompress. But I think I'd get too antsy to just sit there and sit Mai Tais for the rest of my life. That sounds boring, but different strokes, different folks, I guess. Yona, I really appreciate you being on the podcast. How can people reach out to you? Obviously, it sounds like you're super active on LinkedIn. I think that's how you and I got connected. You got a podcast. What are the areas that people can reach out to you?
Yeah, you can definitely follow me on LinkedIn. Don't just follow me, connect, because it's a difference on LinkedIn between connecting and following. Make sure to put a little note that you heard me on this podcast so I'll know where you came from. You can check out Weiss Advice, which is the name of my podcast where I interview incredible people in the real estate space and business world. Or you can follow me on Twitter. I'm pretty active on that platform as well in terms of the real estate community there. It's fascinating.
Yeah, I got it. I hear Twitter's making a comeback, but I don't know as far as the platform, but we'll see. So awesome. Yona, thank you very much for the time. Really appreciate you being on the podcast, man.
It's been a pleasure, Justin. Thanks so much.
Awesome. Have a good one.
I hope you got value out of this episode of the Work Hard, Invest Harder podcast, your one-stop shop for education on how you can continue to work hard in your career and have different options to invest even harder. If you took anything away from this episode, please like and comment. I read every comment as it helps me serve you better. Make sure to subscribe and hit the notification bell. That way, you won't miss out on more valuable content. If you're watching this video, it means that you want to grow your passive real estate portfolio. The easiest way to do that is to join our investor club by heading to greatventurecapital.com/invest. The link is in the show notes. See you on the next episode.